It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome in to the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. Unfortunately, I am not joined this week by my, as-per-usual podcast co-host. Aaron's under the weather this week. I got a text a little bit ago. He and his wife both probably down with strep, both their throats doing rather terribly and losing voices. So we pray for a speedy recovery for Aaron and Holly, and hopefully the children don't get it, because that's just even worse. It's just so much worse when the children also have to deal with all these things. So for the time being, I guess we'll just have to go. I did not have time to really find somebody else to come in and help me, assist me with the podcast this week. So I'll be going with the John Solo route, hopefully that road takes us somewhere. Anyhow, I'll remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at NotSoHumbleHost on Twitter. And you can also follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can follow the show also at Scotty Johnny Pod. Those are the easiest ways to find us. We always post the shows right up to, first off, the show podcast, and then mine and Aaron's as well. And we also put it up on our Facebook page, the Scotty Johnny Podcast Facebook page. And so go look for us there. I try to put it in as many places as I can to get it out there. And hopefully everybody's enjoying it. Again, of course, a big thank you and a welcome in to our friends from the Netherlands and our Canadian friends who seem to keep joining us every week. And our listeners in Indonesia and Belarus. Anyhow, we'll get things going. I'm without Aaron, and Aaron's left me in what he has affectionately termed the sports abyss, but we had a little sprinklings of stuff from the news fairy this week, so we'll get a couple things going here, and we'll start things off with the main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Okay, so the couple things in the main event that I kind of want to start with here, the first one is, we have a couple old familiar names who are showing up and giving some news in terms of former people from Wisconsin sports teams, at least, if not originally from Wisconsin, going out and showing up in the news for other teams. The biggest one that I think most people by now have heard of is Dom Capers now going to the Minnesota Vikings. So that's, and I got a text on this from my former law partner, but you know, that was just the first I heard of it at the time today. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, like, it's a spot you can go. He's not going to be expected to do much of anything because we all know that Zimmer is the defensive coordinator for that team. It's a team where he's going to have, you know, a title, and he'll have a job, but he's not going to have responsibilities. He's not going to have a whole lot of things to do day to day other than just, I guess, being another set of eyes helping to get that defense going. Zimmer calls the plays. I mean, he's not going to be a true defensive coordinator, I guess, in the way that Eric Bieniemy doesn't call the plays for offense, but yeah, you know, Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach by now. All of that being said, I'd rather see the Vikings go out and spend time on something like this than go out and get a real offensive coordinator. We know what the Vikings are on defense. They're a very good defensive team. They lost their offensive coordinator, and he was an okay coordinator. I don't think he was amazing. I don't think Stefanski or whatever, I don't think he was amazing. His offense did well. They've spent a ton of money on that offense. It should do pretty well. He seems to be kind of a guy, and so he's going to go take the Browns job, and, you know, God help him with that. So, but, you know, they didn't go out and get a big name there. They're just kind of promoting from within for people who already kind of work in the set, and Zimmer doesn't want to think about the offense. He doesn't want to have to deal with it. He doesn't want him to throw a lot. He just wants him to control the ball, and he just wants to get the game moving on so his defense can be the heroes of the day at the end of the day. That's really what he wants. And then he wants to go out to midfield and not acknowledge anybody else as being alive or being a better coach than him. So that's the first big name. The second thing that we have here is Ron Renicky, former Brewers manager, back in the news. It looks like he's going to the Red Sox. So a guy who had the deal with Ryan Braun is now walking into the middle of a scandal he had nothing to do with, a cheating scandal in which the Red Sox are accused of having stolen signs. It's what got their last coach fired, or manager, pardon me. And yeah, so he's walking into that, and that should be an interesting set there. Apparently they're saying the players are excited about having him there. He's a guy who did pretty well in terms of talking to players and dealing with players and egos and a lot of things. I mean, he was there when the Brewers had a lot of great talent and managed to do a lot of good with them, just missing a World Series berth because David Freese decided to have the one moment of his entire life that anybody was watching. Yeah, so, you know, good luck to him there. That's a rough spot to go into. He's not only stepping into a team that has, you know, dealt with this or is in the midst of dealing with this entire sign-stealing thing that's going on, but he's also a guy who's going to be stepping into a team that just traded away an MVP candidate and one of the best probably five players in baseball right now, Mookie Betts, so they could save money. In a league where there is no salary cap and the Red Sox make as much money as they want, they can just about print money at this point, I think, legally. They've decided that they're going to cut cap space and let things go. I saw somebody on Twitter trying to make the comparison saying, hey, Nationals let Harper go in the midst of everything, and then they came back and won a World Series. They're like, well, it's a little different. I guess they didn't trade him. They did offer him a ton of money. He just went for more. And I guess the Red Sox, in a way, were at least attempting to negotiate with Mookie Betts, but they weren't anywhere close to each other. I think he threw out a number of like $400 million. And, you know, they could have paid it tomorrow, you know, but they just didn't. I think the big difference there, too, is that what they did after that was they paid several other players who they did have on their team. You know, they had a real identity, which was pitching, and they had enough other people to fill in the outfield to get enough runs to win with that pitching staff, especially the starting, because the bullpen was actually really bad. They were a bad bullpen, but they did have a really good collection of starting pitchers. 1-3 was really good. Was it Corbin Barnes and Strasburg and Scherzer? Scherzer, a former lacrosse logger, of course, is I think everybody should know by now. But yeah, that's. I think it's a weird thing saying like, well, they let a good player go. Another team did that once and they did great. But I mean, in fairness too, the Red Sox can go and sign whoever they want and they'll make up for it. Wherever they want to make up for it. So, you know, they're not going to hurt, but I mean, this is a great day if you're a Yankees fan because, I mean, they've kind of surrendered the league to you or the division to you for a couple years while they get things back together. The last of the three big names that have risen back, the zombie names coming back to us from the grave here, Brett Bielema, somebody who, I'll say I defended him greatly when he was at Wisconsin because I think his record, I think his recruiting ability really shown here. I mean, to be fair, you have to point out too that Barry Alvarez, you know, transitioned so well from head coach to athletic director with his handpicked successor who was already on the staff. That there was no turnover, there was no change in the way that this happened. It was a seamless transition from a known commodity to the known commodity's hand-chosen successor, and it led from strength to strength. And I think it did very well to set Bielema up, and that, of course, led to him going to Arkansas, where the cupboard was bare, and he showed up and had to try to start building relationships, and recruiting relationships don't happen overnight. I mean, Bielema had been recruiting all the places where Wisconsin goes for a couple of years, or at least a year before he was even the head coach. So the guys he had, they were guys he knew, and some of them were guys he'd already recruited. So that's very different than what happened to Bielema when he went to Arkansas, where he suddenly walked into a place where he was an outsider. I think Bielema went to Iowa. He did, because I know he still has the Iowa tattoo and all that stuff. But he went into a completely different area where being from the Midwest helps you in the Big Ten. Being from the Midwest doesn't help you walk into living rooms in SEC country. And he didn't have a seamless transition. He had a bad transition. Things had not gone well in Arkansas for a while. He wasn't a guy who can start from scratch. I think he can be an okay coach. Problem is where he's coming into the news now is he appears to be the front runner to take the Michigan State job. And this was something that when it first came up, I thought I'd do in a last call, which kind of steals my thunder because I'm not going to put it into a last call now. But it's coming up because D'Antonio resigned. And I'll tell you, I can't stand them. I've been very clear on that, I think, from the get-go, because I don't like him. I think he's a coach who, if you have that many dirty players over the years, it's because you're a coach who's okay with having dirty players. You know, it doesn't happen by mistake. You don't accidentally build a culture of people who are like that, who seem to consistently be doing just, I mean, they're just not, there's groups of bad people. Mark D'Antonio has built a team of good talent, and it's full of people that you don't necessarily always want to have around. And it's frustrating. But the other thing is, too, is he's being sued. He's part of the lawsuit against the university, and there's definitely a lot of problems he's facing. Some of them recruiting issues, it looks like, too. So there's a lot more coming out about what's going on here. The big reason that Bielema's name is coming up is, of course, Luke Fickell was probably the number one choice, it looks like, that they wanted to go after. And he has publicly said he will not leave Cincinnati. He will not leave the Bearcats to coach the Spartans. This sheer idea that Michigan State has become such an embarrassment that they can't poach a head coach from the MAC, or I'm sorry, they're not MAC, they're Conference USA. They can't steal a coach from Conference USA, from the Cincinnati Bearcats. Just shows you the state of utter just confusion and embarrassment that Michigan State is other than Tom Izzo. There's definitely spillover from Larry Nassar, and the fact that there were several other cases, I think, that have come up in the last several years of the number of like sexual assaults and other criminal actions that have come from several of the football players that were never really completely dealt with. So there's a lot of problems there. And that's one of the main reasons that I don't like MSU. Generally speaking, I didn't mind them growing up. I mean, I grew up in the UP, where we had a lot of Badgers fans. But, you know, when Michigan and Michigan State were good, you felt all right with them. That would change when I move further south. Obviously, growing up then in Stevens Point, you just don't want to see Michigan do anything because they're bullies. You never felt Michigan State were a group of bullies in like the 80s and 90s. You felt they were teams that try hard and were just never going to be. I mean, they had good teams. They had some good teams in those periods. They won some Rose Bowls, had a couple of really great players, but you never felt they were like Michigan. And now you feel like they're bullies, but differently. They're not just a team full of kind of consistent All-Americans that's just stomping on people. They're a team full of jerks, and they're trying to try to hurt you. And I've never enjoyed them. Watching them up close for the 3 years I had season tickets down there, it was, you know, I saw them twice in Camp Randall, and then again at the Big Ten Championship game, the inaugural Big Ten Championship game, and I have no respect for that team. And I'll tell you, it's also some of the oddness, and they're the loudest, most obnoxious fan base I dealt with, and I watched Ohio State, so they're not obnoxious. They're loud, but they're condescending. They're not necessarily in your face or trying to be mean to you. They just think they're better than you, and you know there's a reason they think that is because they keep beating us. So Brett Bielema gets into the news by default, having been, I think he's a linebackers coach for the Giants. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. He's somewhere bouncing around in NFL teams and stuff like that, just trying to stay in football. But yeah, he looks like he's probably the last person standing and maybe the only person interested, as he has publicly said he is interested in coaching Michigan State. He might be the next head coach of the Michigan State Spartans football team. So that is an interesting turn of events. We'll get back to the things that we have here. I mean, that is kind of sports abyss filler that we've got there, and a little bit of sprinkling from the news fairy, as I said. The next big thing too is basketball. Right now we're in basketball set until we can get some Brewers news. the little bit that we have from the Brewers, I guess, is pitchers and catchers will report on the 12th. I'm recording this on the 10th at night, so you'll hear it on Tuesday. And Wednesday, pitchers and catchers will report. Spring training games will begin February 22nd. Not a whole lot else there, but Major League Baseball gave us a little bit of news today. They've released that they are considering a playoff expansion. And if Aaron were with me, there would be a 15-minute diatribe about how it's terrible and everything's ruined, and the wild card is the worst thing that happened to baseball. And I would disagree with him, and then he would have another 15-minute diatribe, and then we'd say goodnight. But he's not here. So what I'll say is I don't know how I feel about this just yet. This just came out. What they're saying is seven teams from each league. So 14 of the 30 teams get into a playoff. I mean, just under half, but that's neither here nor there. The big thing is there will be seven teams from each league. The first team, the team with the best record in the league, will get a bye for the first round, whatever the round is. The two division winners, as well as the top, the best record for a wild card team, they will get to have a televised thing where they will pick their first round opponent. And I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. It's definitely, if you're the team with the best record, you like just being able to say that, yeah, you just got the other team. The matchup is what the matchup is. When you get to go and say, yeah, I specifically want to play so-and-so, it's the Major League Baseball essentially saying, we're going to start the playoffs with bulletin board material. And they're going to televise it, and somebody will pick it up. It'll be on, like, ESPN or something. And so that's going to be a TV show and everything. I don't know how I feel about that. That part's interesting, at least. It rewards only the best record, then. And then I guess you're picking teams from there, so it will reward the top wildcard team, which I guess you have to remember everything that baseball does is a way of trying to make sure that they can try to help the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Dodgers, I guess, too. They're trying to find a way to do this and to try to help, because this way you could have the Yankees and Red Sox both in that first group, or maybe one of them picking a spot and one of them getting a bye, something like that. But it gets that top wildcard team, which you assume is going to be somebody like Boston, maybe not this year, but soon, somebody like that, because those are the teams that have the money to get there. It's for that next tier of rich teams that can work their way into the top wildcard. But it does open up things for teams who hang near that wild card spot but don't get in. And so that can help teams like the Brewers or the Oakland Athletics or teams like that. But we'll also say that the other side of the conspiracy theory here is the Cubs didn't make anything last year. The Angels. The Angels haven't made it with the best player in baseball. Baseball desperately wants to see the Angels in a playoff, because the best player in baseball, Mike Trout, is sitting there not playing in games like this. They need to get him out there. They need to get some of these bigger names out there. And the playoff system they have now does not feature all their players. It just doesn't. So it's hard to do that. Most people don't watch regular season baseball week in, week out. Most people don't. Most people will watch their own team. If you're a fan of a team, you watch your own team week in, week out. I mean, I put on the game, or I put on the radio and listen to you and whatnot tell me about the game, but I'm not going to sit down as much to watch other teams play. And I think that's basically the base. Is it's a very regional sort of game where you watch your team, you know your team, and a lot of people don't know as much about other teams. What this does is the way you get to know other players, other big names, is they show up in the playoffs over and over again, and you'll watch the playoffs. Well, it's hard when you have somebody like Mike Trout who's not getting into the playoffs because his team's not good enough to be one of the four teams you let in, or five at this point, so you count that one, which Aaron doesn't count the wild card game. But you're letting five teams in, and eventually up to seven per league. You know, you start finding a way to get more of the people in, and then you start knowing more of the names. You start getting more of the teams in. You give everybody a bigger chance to get. I mean, the playoff money is where a lot of that big money can help some of these other teams. We could get a Pittsburgh in there. We could get a Milwaukee in there. We could get the Angels in there. Even though they're from LA and spend more money than most teams, they still don't find their way into the playoffs. Still, that's, I guess, the conspiracy side of it, but it's a way of getting a lot more people involved in a lot of these playoff games. And playoff games, I mean, more playoff games is good for the sport in terms of selling tickets and getting people excited, and everybody feels excited having their team in the playoffs. You know, selling just a shirt that says playoffs, you know, like Brewers playoffs, even if what they did was get in to play that first round. Or maybe I'll say this, maybe Major League Baseball is only doing this just to get Aaron Flottam. Aaron Flottam has to admit that all the wild card games are playoff games if there's four wild card teams. Maybe he won't. Nobody tells Aaron what to do. I've seen Holly try. I have seen her try, but it's just not going to happen. Anyhow, that's as close as we have to Brewers news. The biggest things going on right now, the Badgers basketball team continues to just confuse and confound everybody, I think, at this point. The Brewers in this week just showed you the absolute epitome of what up and down is. They went to Minnesota to play on the weirdest basketball court in NCAA basketball, one where they make sure that you have a place you can fall off of just right next to the floor, because it's Minnesota, and why wouldn't you? I mean, nobody else does it, but why wouldn't you? The Badgers shot 28.4% from the floor and 24.1% from three. It is just a terrible, terrible shooting night for the Badgers. And they allowed Minnesota to shoot not insanely well, but they shot all right. They shot, I didn't write it down, I'm sorry. They were shooting in the 40s, upper 40s, I think, for most of the game there. Up and down, they lost this game 52-70 in Minnesota. You just can't have that. There were only 11 points off the bench. All of them were Micah Potter. So we had the Badgers played eight guys. They had eight guys play at least 17 minutes. Seven of the players on the Badgers played at least 20 minutes. So they played the bench. They just could not get any baskets going. They couldn't get anything happening. Peyton Willis for Minnesota shot 7 of 10, including 5 of 7 from 3. He had 21 points. The Gophers do not play a bench. You want to hear about, like, the Badgers lost a scholarship player and all this stuff. But the Gophers, they got 21 points from Peyton Willis. And they didn't have a single bench player go over 12 minutes. They only had three players on their bench play any time in this game. And they combined for a total of 30 minutes. A combined total of 30 minutes. Pritzel played 27 by himself off the bench. And Micah Potter had 11 points off the bench. So, I mean, the Gophers played a very starter-heavy thing at home. They were shooting just really well, and the Badgers couldn't get anything going on offense. That's the tale of that game. I mean, they were not in it. They did not get back into it. They couldn't shoot their way out of it. They just kept trying, but they couldn't do anything much with that game. So yeah, it was a poor effort. And every time they lose, somebody says something about guard needs to be fired or how hot is guard's seat. And you know then that they're not really watching this team, because the next week they had a big. The next game, they played a really good game and just destroyed Ohio State. And the final score doesn't even tell you how well they played in this game. They were up 38-20 at half. I mean, that game was over. You're like, if they doubled what they did in the first half and the Badgers don't make another basket, it'd be 40-38. That being said, Ohio State immediately came out and shot they outscored them 7-0 for the first little bit of the second half. Ohio State immediately went to trapping in the second half. Like, they started the second half trying to run a full court press. They're trying to, do a double team trap. And the Badgers didn't handle it well, like, the first three times they saw it there. And then they started picking up better passing, better clearing, better getting to better open spots on the court and finding their way up the court a little faster. The first couple times they saw it in that game, it did not go well. But they figured it out. After having a 7-0 run against them, the Badgers just pulled away in this game. Like I said, it was 38-20 at half. They ended up winning. I didn't even bother writing down the final score because that game was over. I think it was 70-54, something like that. Either way, I know the Badgers had 70. Aleem Ford had 10 points. The team shot 37.5% from three. They were 12 of 32, and they did fire up the threes. It probably just started because they did start off rather hot from three and then just kind of kept going, even when the game was kind of out of hand. The Badgers had 67 points and ended up getting a three-pointer late. I can't remember who shot that one. But they got another three late to make it 70. And they were just trying to run the clock down and ended up just putting up a three as there were only a couple seconds left on the clock and made it a 70-point game. But yeah, the big turnaround, especially here, was Pritzel. Pritzel was 0 of 7, including 0 of 4 from three-point against the Gophers. But then he started off the game 7 of 7, including 5 of 5 from three. And so he had 19 points about halfway through the third quarter, or what would be a third quarter, I guess halfway through the second half, he had that. The thing is, though, I mean, he ended the night shooting 7 of 13, which means he missed his last six shots. And he had a couple really nice plays. He had one. He had to have been 7 feet past the three-point line, clock running down, let one up, and just nailed that. And had another nice kind of spin around into a double team, kind of split up and through and kind of fed up into the two-pointer there. He helped pull the Badgers out of the little scoring drought at the beginning of the second half and just, you know, got them kind of going. Like I said, the only other player above 10 points was Aleem Ford. So, I mean, it wasn't just, the starters putting up a ton of points. It wasn't a ton from Trice or Reavers even. It was other players stepping up and making good games. Micah Potter got his first start since coming to the Badgers, and that worked out pretty well, bringing Tyler Wall off the bench in spots to try to get Potter a rest and Ford a rest too. So that was good. A good group of fours that they had when they were doing that. Man, I don't know. I mean, yeah, Pritzel didn't score against Minnesota, but he has played so well this year. He's been such a good shooter, and he seems to be pretty decent on defense. He gets a lot of playing time, but he doesn't get that starting spot yet. So, I texted my dad partway through that game. I don't know how he's not starting. He's playing very, very well, you know, other than the Minnesota game. But he's played great basketball, and this team's, you know, good when he's on the floor. So that puts the Badgers right now. What are they at? They are at 14-10, but they are tied for eighth place in the Big Ten. Now, the big reasons that matters is that eighth place is, well, anything up to 10th place does not play the Wednesday night game. You skip the Wednesday night games. That's for the 11, 12, 13, 14th place teams playing into the Thursday night games. The thing is, if you're in the top four, you don't play Thursday either. You play just Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you can get into that top four, that is a tremendous advantage. You don't have to play yourself into that top, the quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. You just are in the quarterfinals to start off with. Now, the Badgers, they can catch some of these guys, all right? They're a game behind. I'm trying to just make sure I have this right here. I think they're just one game back of fourth place, actually, right now. Even though they're in eighth, Iowa, Michigan State, Rutgers, and Purdue are only a game ahead of the Badgers in conference. Now, they're going to have to play Purdue and Rutgers yet this year. Games coming up yet this month, they got Nebraska, who is 7-16. They got 14-10 Purdue, 17-7 Rutgers, who was ranked just 2 weeks ago, and then 14-9 Michigan. So that's kind of where they are with what they have left here. Those are the next four games that'll get you through the end of the month. I mean, all of those games are winnable. Biggest problem is Wisconsin's ability to play on the road this year. They have not been particularly strong in their road games. There's just a massive flip-flop in terms of their ability to score once they leave the home court. But they have a chance to try to push up there. Right now, most projections have them as either an 8 or a 9 seed and comfortably into the tournament. I think that's accurate. They have a good number of all the things you look for. They have the quad one wins. They have the wins versus ranked opponents. They have a winning record in the Big Ten, which looks like probably the best conference in basketball right now. This is a team that, you know, they're not great. They're not world beaters, but this is a good team, and they're going to beat people who aren't, well, they're going to beat anybody who doesn't play their best game. They're going to beat those teams. So, yeah, this is a team that's got a lot of things going its way, but it's just got to get some of that consistency going and hang in there with some of this stuff. I am absolutely not on the idea that Guard is on a hot seat. I mean, we're talking about a guy whose team is projected to make the tournament, who has a winning record in the Big Ten. Granted, they win more at home than on the road. They've beaten some other quality teams like, you know, Tennessee and people like that. Why is he on a hot seat? Why would anybody think that that's a hot seat, except for the fact that they already didn't like Greg Gard, and they're just trying to find a way to say that he's ruined something. And watching Kobe King leave was a way of trying to say that that must be it. Look, there it is. That's the thing I told you was coming. But, I mean, he's going to get this team into the tournament. I'd be shocked if they don't make the tournament at this point. Knock on wood. And just let you know that, I mean, this team is good enough to make the tournament and will. So, you know, I don't know. I don't understand the people who think that Greg Gard needs to go anywhere. He's been fantastic so far this year. The other college basketball team in Wisconsin continues to do well. Marquette they played Saturday and Sunday. Saturday they beat DePaul at home, and then Sunday they had to turn around and play. Oh, I'm sorry. These are a week apart. I'm sorry. I'm misreading the calendar there. They played Butler at home. That was a really good game. And, Butler coming in ranked 19th. Marquette now actually jumps up to 18th for the first time back up in the top 25, I believe, this year. They're 17-6 right now, and they're sitting tied for second place in the Big East. There's several teams. They're all tied right there with, like, they're one ahead of Butler now, but they're tied with, like, Creighton, and I forget who else, but they're tied for second, but they're three games back of Seton Hall, who's 10-1 in the Big East right now. So Marcus Howard, I guess he ended up leading the team in scoring. He did have 17 points, but they got a lot of points from people we weren't expecting. Brendan Bailey ended up having a 16-point game. Was it Kobe McEwen had a 16-point game? Down the stretch, I'll tell you, if you're watching this game like I was, it was just offset enough that you could spend the day watching Marquette and then catch the entire second half of the Badger game. So it wasn't completely offset for Wisconsin sports fans, but it was enough that you got to kind of flip a little bit and got plenty of time with both teams. Down the stretch, Howard he didn't have to carry this team at all. Marquette got ahead and stayed ahead in this game. It was a 76-57 game. They won by 19 points. The game was basically never in doubt. There was a spot early, I believe it, Marcus Howard got fouled. There was a technical. He made all four free throws in that game. And that, the announcers talked about it later. That was the big turning point in the game, too. The way they had felt about it at the time and talked about it later, they thought that that was going to be a point where Butler was going to rally, and they never did. From that point on, that game kind of walked away. Butler got up 29-21 in about just over halfway through the first half and kind of maintained roughly that same cushion throughout then. I mean, they just kind of stayed comfortably ahead. They were never challenged from that point on. So That is a really good win for Marquette. Marquette's been a very good team this year. While, you know, you got 17 points, 6 of 8 on free throws. So only 11 points from the field because he shot 4 of 11 on the day. Marcus Howard still got some points, but he didn't have to carry this team on Sunday. He was able to go out there and play a good game and take some looks. And he hit a couple big shots. There are a couple times Butler looked like they were kind of gaining a little momentum in the last 10 minutes of that game, and Howard would hit a three. And he did enough to kind of keep them ahead and keep the momentum going, but a lot of players played very well. It seemed like down the stretch, Butler really got kind of sloppy, and they were mostly, it seemed like they were just fouling for like the last 5 minutes of this game. And they just couldn't do anything to get back into it. Then Marquette started finding ways to just dribble out clock and finish this off. So they looked really good. They looked dominant in a game against a very good team. And like we said, they're projected higher than Wisconsin. I think they're projected in a 4 or 5 right now, which I think they were 5 last year, which was a mistake because you don't want to be a 5. But still, second place in the Big East is a good spot to be. It's nice to be there. They get to play Villanova next. That's one of the other teams they're tied with. Both teams will come in 17-6, and I think, was it 7-3 or something in the conference? Actually, I can just double check that here for you. Yeah, 7-4, pardon me. So it's Marquette, Villanova, and Creighton tied at 7-4. But yeah, they'll get to play in Villanova. They will play Creighton at home, at Providence, Georgetown at home, and then they get Seton Hall at the end of February here. Then they'll end with DePaul and St. John's. But February is going to be a tough row here. They've got two teams they're tied with for second place and the first place team in the Big East. You know, so they got at Villanova, Creighton at home, Seton Hall at home. It's good to get those games at home and use your road games to play Providence, but you still have to go to Villanova, which is going to be a very, very tough game coming up Wednesday. It will be on FS1. This week we're going to have Villanova and Creighton. We're going to get a very good idea what Marquette can do and kind of how far they can go this year, because this week is going to be the week that really sets up whether or not they're going to be something like a 3 seed or whether or not they're, you know, maybe they're just a 6 seed. We don't know. This team's going to the tournament too. There's going to be both these teams from Wisconsin getting into the tournament, so it should be an exciting thing to watch, and everybody should be very much looking forward to this, and it's going to be a very exciting time here in the state of Wisconsin once we get to tournament time. The last little bit here that we do have is, or that I have, I guess, since I'm all alone, is Bucks. Bucks played 4 games. They had 4 games this week. They had a very busy week. First off, we got to see them. They went down to New Orleans. They played the Pelicans. By the way, I love that team name. I mean, they got the Pelican on the flag for Louisiana. I love that they're the Pelicans. Pelicans, they've just recently gotten back Zion Williamson. So the NBA gets what it wants. It gets marquee, you know, young talent, rookie coming in for the first time and getting to play the reigning MVP, also a young talent. And Giannis played great in that game. Zion Williamson played very well too. But Giannis is the MVP. And he looks like he's still the MVP this year because he's played amazingly well. And the Bucks just roll through people. They went 4-0 this week. 4-0 this week. They beat the Pelicans 120-8. They beat the Sixers 112-101. They beat the Magic in Orlando 111-95. And then beat the Kings 123-111. Against the Sixers, Giannis had 36 points, 20 rebounds, 6 assists. That actually made him, it set him up to have 3 consecutive games at that point with 30 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists. The only other player to have a 3-game stretch like that is Wilt Chamberlain. And it's a weird combination of 30, 15, 5. And obviously it's kind of a made up little thing, but that's an interesting group because, I mean, those are big numbers. 36, 20 rebounds against the Sixers there. The biggest thing, too, is that every time you go on Twitter and they have one of those polls, somebody puts up a poll, and they're like, what team are you most afraid of? Is like Celtics or the Raptors or the Sixers. It seems the Sixers always wins. And I don't understand that at all because I don't think the Sixers hold a candle to the Bucks this year. I think the Sixers are a dysfunctional team that can beat you once, but they're not going to beat you 4 times in a series. They just aren't, not the Bucks. They'll beat somebody. They're going to get out of the first round. Well, maybe they won't because I think they're the 6th seed right now or the 5th seed. So they might even have a home field or home court advantage through the playoffs, even in the first round there. So I don't know. I'm not intimidated by that team. I know Embiid talks a ton. He's a big physical presence. He can do a lot. And he can intimidate because he can back it up if he really wants to. But he doesn't always want to. And that's the thing, is he just does not always want to do that. And I think the team is put together with a bunch of talent, but it's not put together with complementary talent. I mean, the Bucks with what Middleton, Bledsoe, and Giannis do creates such a great balance to that. I mean, they've got enough cutting, chasing guys. They've got, you know, and also Lopez in that as well. The way those guys can play off of each other and the way that they all do something different but also complementary is great, and it's valuable. It's a well-put-together team. And the other thing is the Bucks 10 deep on that roster are guys who can play. And so I don't see that from Philadelphia. I just don't see any reason to be afraid of Philadelphia. I think Toronto's got obviously a coach who knows what he's doing, manages a good team. I think Boston has a very good coach, and I think they got a lot of talent on that team. I'm far more afraid of them. The other thing is that those teams and the Bucks all beat the Sixers, who are in fifth. I was right about that. They were in fifth place, 13.5 back from the Bucks, and the Bucks beat them the last two times they played. And everybody gets all excited because there was a Christmas Day game where they beat the Bucks, but I mean, they got up for one big game, and then they lost like their next three. So there's just nothing scary or intimidating about Philadelphia at this point, because I don't think Giannis is afraid of Embiid. I think where Embiid gets by is he can intimidate a lot of people because he's so big. I don't think anybody in the Bucks is afraid of him. And there's nobody afraid of Simmons or any of those other players. So I don't understand people being afraid of Philadelphia. It's a good win because I don't like him. And I don't like Embiid at this point, though I liked him in college. But they're definitely a good foil for the Bucks. They definitely make Giannis, he brings out the mean mug when he sees them too. He's great when he has them. There was a fun moment. Giannis ended up one assist shy of a triple-double against the Magic. He was 18 points, 18 rebounds, 9 assists. At one point, they had, I guess when the game ended, they had credited him with 19 points. Turns out they had accidentally assigned a free throw to Giannis he hadn't made. So it was actually 18, 18, and 9. Just missed the triple-double. The Bucks tonight, Monday night, beat the Kings. I said that one earlier. They're now 46-7. The Bucks did this tonight, home game against the Kings. You got to beat the Kings. They did it without Giannis. Giannis had a baby. His wife had a baby here, so they just had a baby. Liam Charles Antetokounmpo was just born today, so Giannis stayed home with his son, and just, you know, congratulations to him. It's a wonderful thing to have. It's a wonderful time to be able to see your newborn, your child, and to have that moment. So congratulations to him. They definitely didn't need him for this game. It's good for him to take the time off and be there for something this important in his life. As somebody who was unable to get to the birth of my first son, because I was in Kuwait and he didn't wait for me to go on my general leave that I was supposed to be getting. It's good to be there, and it's something, you know, I wouldn't ever fault somebody for wanting to be there for that. And nobody should, because it's a valuable, important thing. And we think people should miss it because we don't have to miss it ourselves. And sports aren't that important. Congratulations to Giannis, and hope everyone is well and good there. So, yeah. But the Bucks win again. So they're 46-7 right now. Here's the thing to think about. Washington Wizards, and I put some of this out on Twitter and before the game even. Washington Wizards are now 18-33. That team is in ninth place in the East. That means the best they could do is 49-33 if they won every game from here on out, which I'm going to let you know that's not going to happen. If you've watched the Wizards, that will not happen. They will give up 10 billion points before the season is over. So if the Bucks can win 4 more games before the year ends, they're guaranteed a playoff spot. 4 games is the magic number. That's ridiculous. They have now played 53 games. They've played 53 now. So there's 29 games left. So, you know, if you look at this right now, they're 6.5 clear of Toronto. They're 8.5 clear of Boston, 11.5 ahead of Miami, 13.5 ahead of Philadelphia. They're 11-0 against the division, 28-3 against the conference. They average 19.8 points per game. I mean, just nobody has that. Any other teams ahead of 10 points a game is, well, let's see. There's several ahead of 10, but I don't see anybody else scoring 15 points a game. Next closest looks like Portland over. New Orleans gets 117 points a game, and Minnesota gets 116. Oh, I'm sorry, that's opponents' points. I apologize. So 115, like the Clippers get 115. New Orleans gets 115. But the Bucks, they get way more. But they're also only giving up 107. Their point differential is 12.5. And nobody else, they're the only team in the double digits there. The way that they're just out in front and ahead of everybody, I mean, they're going to be the number one seed. They are going to be the number one seed. Again, I try to watch them sometimes when I can. The NBA season is just the least impressive, least fun season in professional sports because it doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't mean anything. We already know at this point in the year, we know who's getting in. The only excitement is, hey, do you think Washington can move past Orlando, maybe catch Brooklyn? And that's not exciting at all. Maybe Chicago could get up to Orlando. It's a bunch of teams with losing records at that point. Anyone below six in the East has a losing record. Actually, the entire West has a winning record right now in the teams looking to make the playoffs, but it's close. The eighth place team is Portland, who is 25-29. So yeah, I just think the Bucks are going to pull away. I think they're better than the teams they got here, although, you know, playing LeBron in the playoffs is different than playing LeBron in the regular season. So as it goes, there's another great week. Bledsoe's playing well. Middleton put up another great game today, and him and Bledsoe carry the team through a win without Giannis. Getting the management on Middleton and Giannis right now so they can go through the amount of physicality that's coming in the playoffs is going to be important. We had a first-year head coach last year who was really kind of figuring some of this out. In the same way that Matt LaFleur needs to figure out how to take a team to the West Coast, Budenholzer, Neil has to get a little bit better at playing the best teams in the playoffs. I mean, he did very well for the first two rounds, but, man, he got up 2-0 on Toronto and then fell apart. So should have closed out game three, and I think they would have gone to the finals and won. But, yeah, maybe they got a better plan this year, getting themselves ready for what matters most and close out the season. They're on pace to being the third team in NBA history with 70 wins. It's crazy how good this team is. And All-Star break coming up, which will really, really be the sports abyss. I think they have one game this week. I'll double-check that for you here. Yeah, so they play on the 12th, so they play Wednesday, and then they don't play again until the 20th. So they'll play the Pacers and then move further ahead of them, and then they will play the 9-37 Pistons after they come back from the All-Star break. That thing takes forever. When we don't have that, it's going to be the sports abyss. It'll be, I don't know, we'll start talking golf and NASCAR or something. I don't know anything about either of those. So I know I'm bad at golf, I guess, is the one thing I can tell you. That's about all I know about golf. Other than that, I don't have a lot more in terms of sports news. So we'll kind of wrap this up with our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right. Well, without having Aaron here, this should go fairly quickly because we won't have as much commentary, I suppose. In terms of, we'll start off with wrestling this time. Without Aaron, we'll mention that UW got a chance to play the number 2 ranked Penn State Nittany Lions this week. Cale Sanderson is their head coach. Anybody who follows any wrestling knows who Cale Sanderson is. Penn State, the number 2 ranked team, beat the number 9 ranked team, currently number 9 ranked Badgers after this last weekend, 29-10. Heavyweight wrestler and I believe 5th ranked heavyweight, meaning 285 and above wrestler, in the country, had to forfeit. I believe he got injured before the match and couldn't wrestle this one. So there's a bunch of points that you didn't get, but they weren't in this. It's 29-10. Penn State came, and they came big on this one. Wisconsin had 2 wrestlers who were favored by just their overall rankings. Like I said, at 133, they had the top-ranked wrestler in the country, and at 285, they have the 5th-ranked, who was playing the 15th-ranked in this one, but didn't get to wrestle that one. Currently, Big Ten has plenty of power in this right now. Iowa undefeated 10-0 at number 1, Penn State 8-2 at number 2, Nebraska at 7-3 at number 4. Ohio State is 9-3, sixth ranked team. Wisconsin now 10-3 in duels and is the ninth ranked team in the country. Minnesota is all the way down now at 13 at 9-5. Next up for Wisconsin, I believe the current, currently unranked Michigan Wolverines in Michigan. So that will be the next matchup for Wisconsin. That's one the Badgers should win. We're about a month out from the Big Ten tournament and their meet, and then the national tournament will be March 19th and 20th. So we'll kind of look at that a little bit as we get closer. I'm sure Aaron will try to find a way to watch that too. In terms of D3 basketball, we've already talked about the big ones, our D1 programs here, but UW-Platteville is now the number 12 ranked team in the country. They did beat the only other ranked school in Wisconsin this last week. They beat UWL 83-75 in Platteville. UWL is, of course, UW-Lacrosse Eagles. Eagles lost that one, were unable to bounce back. They lost to defending national champion UW-Oshkosh. Titans in the 74-79 loss to the Titans. Moving on to the last bit here, that we do always try to give you a little wrap up of some college hockey. The Badger women actually got a 1-1 here. They split a series with Minnesota State Mankato. They had a 5-1 win and then they lost 1-3. That split moved the Badgers down to second. Cornell, the Big Red, jumped Wisconsin to number one. Wisconsin still receiving 4 of the 15 first-place votes, Cornell getting the other 11. So Cornell moves into first place now. Wisconsin drops to number two. So that's where they are now. The men's team got swept by Michigan in Ann Arbor, 4-8 and 3-5. Doesn't get easier from here. They're going to play the number 9-ranked Nittany Lions. Coming up next week, 2 games against Penn State. That will be at the Kohl Center, it looks like. The thing to keep your eye out here, if you're looking at Wisconsin hockey and you're saying, look, this men's team is just not up to the snuff of what Wisconsin hockey has been. Remember, Granados, and I believe in his third year now, this is really his second full cream class. Of the top 10 scorers on this team, there are 4 freshmen, 2 sophomores, and 4 juniors. They do not have a senior-heavy team. Their starting goalie is a sophomore, Lebedev. Of the top 10 scorers, that includes being scorers, goal scorers, and assists. And that includes guys like Cole Caulfield, who is going to be a star. He was the top 3 pick in the NHL draft already. He's going to go, unfortunately, play for the Canadiens. Cole Caulfield, Alex Turcotte, Owen Lindmark, and Dylan Holloway, all freshmen. We still have guys like Aachen and Keandre Miller and, you know, other guys there who are going to be playing for us for a little bit yet while they hone some of their skills. They're goal-scoring guys in a lot of ways. Guys like Keandre Miller, I mean, he's a scoring defenseman. Probably one of the best scoring defensemen in hockey right now, in college hockey right now. He's up there at least. He's the guy the Rangers are very excited about having come up to the NHL. But, I think, you know, we need... They just need to get a little more time under them. They're still developing a lot of part of their games. There are a lot of young guys on this team. Like I said, you've got sophomores, 6 of your top scorers, of your top 10 scorers, 6 of your top 10 scorers, as well as your top goalie, sophomores or freshmen. Going down to the D3 level of hockey, UW-Eau Claire, still at number 2 right now. Number 2 ranked team in D3 men's hockey. UWSP actually climbs the ladder a little bit this week. I believe they're up to 11 straight wins. They move to the 11th place spot here with their 11 straight wins. They beat, they went to Menominee and beat UW Stout twice, beat them consecutive times. Obviously, they swept them after sweeping the previously 12th ranked Yellow Jackets of UW Superior. And so UWSP keeps moving up. St. Norbert's moves from being unranked up to 14th in the latest poll. They're 13-8-2. Now, the one thing is, they have a chance. The WIAC, the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, or they don't have an automatic bid. It's 5 teams. So they don't get an automatic bid into the D3 tournament. So they have to really work in as an at-large and try to find their way in. Last year, since they were an undefeated team, there was no real question about it. But I don't think there's a chance that UW Stevens Point and UW Eau Claire both make the tournament. So UWSP has a long road here to try to find their way back into a tournament they won last year and brought back quite a lot of guys too. St. Norbert, however, in the NCHA is a larger conference. There's a 10-team, but they're fifth, and I think it's like a 10 or 12-team conference. They're fifth right now. They're behind several other teams, but there's an automatic bid if they can get a win in that tournament and get themselves in. Anyone who doesn't know, St. Norbert is in De Pere. They're another one of the powerhouse D3 hockey programs. They have several national championships. They're a very, very good hockey program. In terms of women's hockey, UW Eau Claire holds steady at number 3. They're now 17-2-2. They're only behind Plattsburgh and Middlebury. Plattsburgh getting all 15 first place votes. They're 21-1-0. So the top four remain unchanged. Gustavus Adolphus moves up from 6-5 as Hamlin drops. UW River Falls holds steady at 8. So those are River Falls and Eau Claire, the only two women's teams who are ranked right now. And looking good for trying to move on here as they go. All right. And that's really all I've got. I don't have a whole lot of other fun things to add here this week. Covered a lot of them kind of up to the front. But hopefully we have Aaron back next week, back and healthy. Hopefully Holly is back and healthy and all of them are rested and well-doing. And Andrew and Ruby and all that. I hope everybody's feeling better over there in the Flotham House. I hope all of you, our wonderful listeners, are also doing well. Thank you again for joining, I was going to say us, but me, for another week of Wisconsin sports. It's always a pleasure to come here and have an opportunity to talk sports and kind of get away from daily grinds. So however you listen to us, please go download, subscribe, rate, and review us. Give us the 5-star ratings when you can. Also, remember to follow me at Not So Humble Host. Remember to follow the podcast at Scotty Johnny Pod. And remember to follow Aaron too, even though he's not here. He's still probably tweeting something insane. Something insane. Go look at it. At Cheddar Talk. And of course, the biggest thing you should remember is that whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at Scotty Johnny 1 or online.